Before we begin, if anybody who's here this evening has not yet taken the simple explanation of work ideas class, or you intended to be taking the simple explanation of work ideas class, that's happening in the library, and that'll go on for 6 weeks, and it's one of the classes that's necessary for membership in the church, but it also is a focused introduction to the ideas of the work. So if you would like to be participating in that, you're welcome to go to the library, and Jack and Judith will be there to welcome you. Well, before we begin tonight, we'll listen to the gospel reading from the liturgy for today, and then there'll be a chance to comment on that. And then I'm going to open with the first commentary that we're going to work with tonight. It's a page and a half, and it'll summarize a lot of what we talked about last week. And it also may be a good launching point for reconnecting with some of the experiences that we had this week in terms of bringing the work up to the place of incoming impressions and separating out that impression, recognizing it is not I after the observation. So we'll begin in the name of the Father, transcendent, and the Son, omnipresent, and the Holy Spirit, immanent and indwelling. A reading from the Holy Gospel according to Mark. Chapter 1. A leper came to him and, kneeling down, begged him and said, "If you wish, you can make me clean." Moved with pity, he stretched out his hand, touched the leper, and said to him, "I do will it. Be made clean." The leprosy left him immediately, and he was made clean. Then, warning him sternly, he dismissed him at once. Then he said to him, "See that you tell no one anything, but go, show yourself to the priest, and offer for your cleansing what Moses prescribed. That will be proof for them." The man went away and began to publicize the whole matter. He spread the report abroad, so that it was impossible for Jesus to enter a town openly. He remained outside in deserted places, and people kept coming to him from everywhere. A leper came to him and, kneeling down, begged him and said, "If you wish, you can make me clean." Moved with pity, he stretched out his hand, touched the leper, and said to him, "I do will it. Be made clean." The leprosy left him immediately, and he was made clean. Then, warning him sternly, he dismissed him at once. Then he said to him, "See that you tell no one anything, but go, show yourself to the priest, and offer for your cleansing what Moses prescribed. That will be proof for them." The man went away and began to publicize the whole matter. He spread the report abroad so that it was impossible for Jesus to enter a town openly. He remained outside in deserted places, and people kept coming to him from everywhere. A leper came to him and, kneeling down, begged him and said, If you wish, you can make me clean. Moved with pity, he stretched out his hand, touched the leper, and said to him, I do will it. Be made clean. The leprosy left him immediately, and he was made clean. Then, warning him sternly, he dismissed him at once. Then he said to him, See that you tell no one anything, but go show yourself to the priest and offer for your cleansing what Moses prescribed. That will be proof for them. The man went away and began to publicize the whole matter. He spread the report abroad so that it was impossible for Jesus to enter a town openly. He remained outside in deserted places, and people kept coming to him from everywhere. The Gospel of the Lord. There's anything that you'd like to share that was touching for you? Yes, Jackie.
I love this passage. The work says that a true wish is the most powerful thing.
Yeah.
And we are reminded, I remember Tim saying years ago, to go up 6 inches, you have to go down 6 inches. And in this case, of course, go down on your knees, humble submission. And I find it interesting the juxtaposition of wish and will in this passage. Mm-hmm. And when I have a true wish and I turn it over to God, I have access to higher centers. I can't get there on my own.
Thank you. Emily?
I heard, moved with pity, Jesus reached out his hand and touched the leper. And to me, that really spoke of compassionate, three-centered observation. To touch the leper was to experience the full three centers and the healing that can spontaneously happen as a result.
Yes.
And it also spoke to me of one, of course, as I just said, meeting my own eyes with compassion. Meeting the eyes in others with compassion. And to ask myself, too, am I reaching out to others in compassion, or am I moving into my Pharisee and needing to follow the rules?
Thank you, Emily. One of the parts that was awakened in me as I read this was where after we have moments of healing and awakening, after we have those really powerful interior moments, how easily we give that energy away rather than preserve it, maintain it, use it for our transformation, it leaks out. And at the same time, like Bernadette Roberts had said one time when she was here, that when you get God, you just can't help but to talk about it. Yes. Thank you, Pam.
Well, I was curious when I read this earlier about the prescription to not say anything and then go to do what Moses would prescribe there, and that would be proof. And I was, and when I heard you read it instead of me reading it, I kind of had the thought about laws and the law of three and the law of seven, and that the miracle really happened because it was lawful, not that it was a personality, a spectacular Superman that made this. Now, I'm not saying that all that can't be looked at differently, but just I was curious about the whole thing about Moses and the prescription to go, and that that would be proof. And it seems to me, really, that that's it's evidence of the lawful action of the universe, that when aligned with that, the healings do take place and things do, something new is produced. Yeah.
Thank you. Well, we're going to go into transformation then. And this is the fourth part of transformation in the work. So I'll read this page and a half and reflect on it, and let's talk about some of the experiences we've had during the week. Let's take the idea of work on oneself. As all you know by now, we take the thing which we call oneself, that is myself, yourself, is one thing. We think we are ourselves. Work on oneself is thus made quite impossible. How can you work on you if you and you, in each case, are one and the same thing? But you and yourself are not the same thing. If you and yourself were the same thing, work on yourself would be impossible. Think for a moment. If you and yourself are identical, that is one and the same thing, how can you observe yourself? Would it not be impossible? A thing cannot observe itself. How could it do so? If you take you as yourself and yourself as you and think that you and yourself are the same thing, then how do you propose to begin to observe yourself? You will try to observe you. How can that be possible? A thing cannot observe itself. A thing identical with itself cannot see itself, because it is the same as itself. And a thing which is the same as itself cannot possibly have a standpoint apart from itself, from which to observe itself. It cannot possibly have a standpoint apart from itself, from which to observe itself. I say all this in order to emphasize how difficult it is for people to begin to work on themselves. The reason is that they take themselves as themselves. If a man takes himself as himself, he cannot observe himself. Everything is himself. He says I to everything. If a man says I to everything in himself, then everything in him is I. And how can he observe himself? How can I observe I if they are one and the same thing? Does his redundancy here help us to understand how important he thinks this message is to get across? How many different ways can you try to convince the people of the same thing? At one moment, he is irritable and rude. At the next, kind and polite. But he says, I to it all. And so he cannot see it all. It is all one to him. He cannot see it apart from himself, and he and himself are one and the same thing to his mind, that is, to his way of thinking. This massive stumbling block lies across everyone's path, and long, very long overcoming of it is the task of working on oneself. And how long it takes before a man can begin to see what it all means, and what the work is always saying. I have watched people in the work often for many years who have not yet caught a single flash of the meaning of self-observation. That is, people who still take everything that takes place in them as I, and say I to every mood, I to every thought. Every impulse is I to every feeling, every sensation, every criticism, every feeling of anger, every negative state, every objection, every dislike, every hate, every dejection, every depression, every whim, every excitement, every doubt, every fear. Well, that's a good stopping point, because if one ever wondered, what is it like to observe an eye? What does an eye look like? Well, he just gave us about 20 of them. And very easy ones for us to connect with, right? We know these experiences. And this is a good, I like the way he worded this sentence, to every train. You can just see a train with its different components, the locomotive that's moving it, and even the caboose of the energy at the end. Every train of inner talking, they say I. To every negative monologue, they say I. To every suspicion, they say I. To every hurt feelings, they say I. To every form of imagination, they say I. To every movement they make, they say I. To everything that takes place within them, they say I. In such a case, the work can only be something listened to externally, something heard, said to them, the words of which they remember or not, as may be the case. But they have no idea of what work on themselves means, because they have no idea yet that there is such a thing as themselves. They look out of their two eyes, and they listen with their two ears, and they see and hear what is outside of them, where, in this case, is the thing called themselves. Is not everything outside them except something they call I? Is not life a lot of things outside and some things they take for granted as I, that is, themselves? And if this work is not about things outside that they can hear and see and touch, well, what is it really about? For there is surely nothing else except outside things and something that is I. At the same time, they may feel the work emotionally. They may feel that it is about something strange and genuine and real. But they cannot see exactly what it is about. They continue to talk as they have always talked and say I to it all. They continue to feel and think as they have always felt, in thought and say I to it all. To all their manifestations, to all their mechanicalness, to all their inner life, they say I. And since everything is I, what is there to work on? This is quite true. I just had a funny memory came up. After I had first met Tim, I think it was maybe in Kansas City or somewhere, I had listened to some of the recordings of the church, and I'd lived in New York at the time, and so I saw him, and we had a little conversation, and I wanted to learn more about what was taught here. And so he gave me a list of books to read. And this is what he said. After you read those books, if you're not too offended by what you've read, call me. And I thought that was a very unusual thing to say. About a year later, I had met him again. We were, we both attended a Hindu ceremony called Guru Purnima, the celebrating and chanting throughout the night the full moon of the Guru. And it was a summertime night, and after the chanting, we took a little break, and probably 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, we're sitting out under the moon, and, sitting on lounge chairs, and so cavalier and casual. I had my arms behind my head, my legs out, stretched across, and I said to him, yeah, I'd like to do this thing called the work, but I really don't know what I got to work on. My life's pretty good, you know. I got business is going really good. Great wife, great family, great home. I don't know. And he didn't say a thing. Just those big white teeth were grinning in front of the moon as he looked at me. And after a while he said, the work will show you some things. Wow. Was that an understatement? That was a man who had the feeling of I. All these different emotions that are going on in my life, all the different experiences, I. Nothing separated. There was no experience of inner separation. The whole inner sense called the observing I wasn't even an infant yet. It hadn't even been cracked open. Maybe the experience when you first came to the work may be a little similar to that. Since everything is I, then what is there to work on? This is quite true. For everything connected with a person in outer manifestation and in inner life is I, and there is only I. If everything connected with him is I, then there is nothing to work on. For one who can work on I, if everything is I, excuse me, for who can work on I, if everything is I? What can observe I, if everything is I? The answer, of course, is that nothing can. A thing cannot observe itself. There must be something different in it for the thing to observe itself. And in our own cases, in the case of everyone, if there is nothing in us different from ourselves, how can we observe ourselves and work on ourselves? For to work on oneself, it is necessary to begin to observe oneself. But if I and myself are one and the same, how can this ever be possible? I will have nothing to work on, for the reason that I regard everything that I do, everything that I say, everything that I feel, everything I think as I. And so that if you speak to me of myself, I will take it that you are speaking of me, what I call I. And whatever you say about me, I will take it as myself. that is, as I. For to my way of thinking, I and myself are identical. To my way of thinking, they are one and the same thing. Is it no wonder that we are so easily offended when people say things to us? That we take what they're saying to us and we assign it to I. Well, from that inspiring commentary, what do we have for the week? What type of experiences have we had this week that we want to anchor outside? You know, at the end of the class last week when we were talking about this exercise, I could see how the idea of seeing an impression, observing an impression, and separating from it, this is not I, seems like such a simple and repetitive exercise that it may not be very interesting and may not be exercised. And I wondered, will this be exercise be heard mechanically? Or will this exercise be heard in inner parts of center? Will it be intentionally taking in through the performatory apparatus and given directions on where it will fall? Will it touch anything emotional and have meaning? Or will it just remain formatory, familiar, mechanical? So does anybody have anything for the week? Yeah, Jackie, thank you.
I'm here to play. I have been in the middle of a series of impressions that have been coming to me and transforming all day today, beginning this morning with an email communication. And in a nutshell, it communicated to me that I am involved in something happening this weekend with which I will suddenly have a lot more responsibility. And the work immediately came up to meet me. I didn't get through half of part of the email before I saw like red flashing lights, like open, 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 saying, I have a right not to be negative. I have a right not to be negative. And I just kind of laughed at that point. And I realized that we get aims and assignments exactly when we need them. And I had all my work tools ready. But what I discovered was that impression evolved into other impressions that were related over the day. And they were landing, all of them, in different places in me. And of course, there were different work tools for each time they landed, but it felt not like a train of impressions, but it felt like I was in an auditorium in the middle, and all these eyes were around me, and they were all different. And something would suddenly come in, and what I used in the last one wouldn't work for this one. So in moments I was identified and I would reach for something like I have the right not to be negative, or if I'm negative it's my own fault. And a couple of times I went, what the hell is that? And I realized, okay, I'm identified right now. But I was looking out and looking in at the same time. I always had enough inner separation that I got that this was the game. And that I had a future memory of everything being completely all right, always. and that this was actually for me and something that I could have some fun with. So I don't have a clue how any of this will end up, and I don't really care, and that's different. Normally I wouldn't even be here when an event like this is going on. I would have self-justified going out and doing something
yeah.
to prepare for this event.
Yeah.
But I knew I needed to be here tonight to
yeah.
work.
Yeah. Yeah.
So nice. Thank you.
Nice, thanks. Thank you for bringing the work and being here. In the spirit of play, I mean, gee whiz, when we begin to see this, it's no wonder that Nichol is such an extraordinary teacher, says right from the beginning, right at the start, you just have to take this whole thing lightly, because you'll find out it's not what we thought it was.
And one of these commentaries talks about hydrogen 12 and mm-hmm. having that come up to yeah. meet it, and it has to be emotional.
Mm-hmm.
And it has to be, obviously, a positive emotion. And there is excitement here. I'm feeling a very fine energy that is work energy
mm-hmm.
that would really potentially transform anything
yeah.
and
yeah.
gives me enough to do whatever I need to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That all we have to do is bring a work idea up once and have the experience of it transforming an impression. And we know that leper now. We know the experience of that leper. You can heal me if you wish. It will. Yeah. We can say that in faith. Thank you. Yes, Greta.
A couple of months ago, I had an event that opened up a lot of time in my life. And that time was very good for me to reflect on eyes within myself and see negative ones and positive ones surrounding that event. About a couple of weeks ago, and I remained more introverted and within myself as I processed everything until I felt that I had done that sufficiently to be free of eyes that did not mean good to me, were not good for me. And then I have begun to see friends more often since I have more time. And this, in the last couple of weeks especially, has pointed out to me the difference between empathy and sympathy. Because our culture teaches us to sympathize, that is, equate whatever the experience of another is with something that's the same within ourselves, and then commiserate, that is, share the misery. However, since I no longer have misery, it has been very interesting for me to work with people to transform their desire and my desire to satisfy them because they're friends with misery, and instead with centeredness and balance, and ask them to just sit in empathy with me, which is a completely different thing, mm-hmm. and helps to transform any feelings with positive third force rather than with, you know, bringing up a second force again and again and again. Because with commiseration, one revisits places that either have already been processed or need not be revisited, because there is no sense in continuing with negative emotions. They just eat at us like poison.
Yeah.
So it's been a really good week.
Nice. May you have all the time you need. Anna.
When I first enrolled in the simple explanation of the work, I have to tell you, the idea that I'm a multiplicity was crazy.
Yeah.
I mean, it was downright out there.
Yeah,
I thought, oh my God, what have I gotten myself into?
Yeah.
I mean, these people are really out there.
Yeah, I sold a home and moved here and had that experience. I had no place left to go.
And I have to say, the one thing that the work said was, try it on yourself. I heard that. I mean, I sat there, but all these judgments start to come up, saying these ideas that they have is just not sound. Yeah. There's a voice that talks. And I realized, wait a minute, I heard that. I heard that voice. What is that? And then as I begin to observe, I start to appear, holy crap, I'm a multiplicity.
Yeah.
And it started to sound, all these negative ones, the positive ones, ones that wants to work, ones that wants to believe, ones that want to disbelieve, ones that wants to be a critic, the judge, they all come.
Yeah.
And the thing is, I was talking to my work partner this week, and she had said to me, I don't raise my hand. I just find it very intimidating to raise my hand. And she said, you know, that I share and share very, you know, real about it, because I said, because I realized in the past 2 years of being in the work class that when I raise my hand, I share the worst of the eyes to you all. And guess what? They shrink. They go away. Not all the way. They're there a little bit, but much more to the periphery. So when I raise my hand and I share in this group of very trusting and loving people, and I know that, it's almost like a Catholic confession for me.
Right.
But then to expose something sometimes that seems so ugly, it seems to make it so small and tiny that it doesn't seem to matter anymore. Mm-hmm. And the reason why I started to share and really share earnestly is because I heard Joe, I don't know if he's in here tonight, but he raised his hand one day and shared about the eyes that judge people who are coming in, overweight, they're late to his yoga class. And I thought, how brave is that to be able to share something like that? But did I feel anything negative towards him? No, I loved him. I loved him. I love his sharing because it was so real. Mm-hmm. And it makes me just want to embrace that, because I know that that's also in me. I judged, you know, the eyes that judge. It's in me. So when I hear someone share about all these eyes, and some of them are so lovely, and then some of them are not so lovely, I see it in me, and it helps me to know that you all have the same eyes. Now, I know I'm a multiplicity. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. We are each other's confessors here. Yeah, I can remember when I was a boy and a teenager and in college and before I got married, I was in the Catholic Church and would go to confession. And you know, something about confession, where I was in church, is there's fabric between you and the people outside. They're not closed compartments sealing off what is said. And I could listen to myself whisper when I got to the sins that I didn't want anybody outside to hear. And then here, sometimes I would get to the place where, after having negative blow-ups, there would be this look on my face, and everybody would know, oh, he's there, or he's been there. And I wouldn't want to come to church. And I had a work partner one time who said, oh, that's the time you need to come the most, just get rid of the illusion that it's who you are. It's just an eye. It's like, wow. He says, that's what I do. And that was so helpful. You see, that's what we do for each other here. We confess in second line and in with work partners and here. We confess, we anchor outside of ourselves these illusions of I, and we give each of them a name, like any of the 20 or so that he gave us here. Depression, objection, dislike, hate, fear, moods, all of those I's, they're not I. They're just an energy level, but we're under the false thinking that they are who we are. And this is why this is called a second education. We need to learn that they are not I. And I really appreciate you talking about how they become passive as the light of consciousness shines on them. They become passive. They don't have as much energy anymore. That's what we do for each other. So we hold each other. We see each other through Christ's eyes as we do our work. Yeah. I can recall one of the biggest nights for me in the work was, and I've given the okay to say this publicly now, but Alicia stood up in a group of 70 people and said, I'm not happy. He's not a good husband. He's not a good father. He's not a good boss. And his kids are afraid of him, and his family is afraid of him. I was astounded. Not because what was said about me, but because that's not what I thought we did here. And I didn't believe any of it. Which really shocked Tim and Barbara that I had no belief in what was just said. At which time Tim suggested I should come in and the four of us should come in and meet and get my eyes open. And we did. We hit the first meeting. He blasted me with a voice. He said, Don, this is your chance to wake up. This wasn't the picture that I had of myself. So I did the things that he asked to do. Started listening to music that I used to listen to back when I was younger. Called my mom, called the guys that used to work for me. Talked to some of my brothers and sisters. Began to notice the way I was around my children. It's like, oh my gosh, I'm the last one to know that this is the experience of being with him. Everybody else knew but me. It was like all of a sudden the sheet had dropped. And I realized that my entire life was an illusion of my imagination and that I was having an entirely different experience than everyone else. But that also told me it was the same thing for everybody else. We're also having what we talked about in the last three commentaries on transformation. Each of us is having a different experience in life. And life to us is this one solid thing. No. Life is our impressions. We don't see life as it is. We see life as we are. And this is where we come alive, we come awake. And we won't be able to see these things unless the honesty comes out, unless we're willing to see these things. And why would we want to protect an illusion? Isn't that just silly? To protect an illusion? So we do need to come to church when we are there. And when others talk, that's our priestly opportunity to hear the confession and to self-remember for them at a time when they can't. It's so unique what we do here. It is so, so unique. And so you can also appreciate from this why it's so important for us to talk about the eyes, the energies that we're experiencing, not the events. Okay? Don't get lost in the events. We want to talk about what that experience is within myself. And that's why we keep the names of the innocent protected. Because it's really just about this I in myself. Thank you for that sharing. Jill, thanks for your sharing too. That was an honest moment. Pam.
Two things that pertain to what we just read that were examples. And as you talked, there's probably a different slant on the first one I was going to share. I was in a meeting of a safe group of people, loving people, and after the shared there, and after the meeting, it was a group of people, I didn't know anybody in the group at this particular one, and somebody I didn't know came up to me and said, I want to thank you for being something to the effect of being the voice of God, my higher power for me today, because I really need to hear blah, blah. And the flavor of that was so different than any other compliment. It was the perfect thing. And I was so grateful to know some work ideas about magnetic center. I needed to hear it that way because this one has eyes that can either in pride go to a rejection of a compliment or be inflated by it either way, you know, because I said the right thing and I fixed it or I helped or I did helping. That's, you know. At any rate, so that was one. The other was kind of humorous. As time has gone on in the work at home, my husband and I, you know, we're both retired, we're around the house, and when I see an eye of reaction occasionally catching it, it's just so funny. I'll say something about, oh, it just wants to say blah, 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 you know, and I walk around the kitchen. I'm not even thinking about him really being there and listening to me say that, oh, it really wants to do that, and I'll be talking to myself like that, and my husband will turn around, he'll go, are you talking about you? I really worry. Are you talking about you? And I go, well, not really. I'm not really talking about me. Anyway, just, it's just, you know, he's so tolerant and I'm so grateful that he is. And yeah. It really helps me to put it out like that.
Yeah.
So.
That's very good. Yeah, it does. It is good. Yeah. Yeah. When I first came to this church and participating in the 10th man school, and for probably, I don't know, 8 or so years from that, Tim had us doing the practice of not saying I, of using, kind of like Bob Dole on the campaign trail. He would say Donald or D or something like that, but you wouldn't say I or me. And, you know, it was all a practice of trying to separate, get us to realize that this is not I. Try that sometime. Try to speak for a day or a week without saying I or me, without being self-referential in that way. But whatever you do, don't draw second force. Don't be crazy with this. So we don't do that around here for that reason, is because visitors would come and they'd say, what is going on here, right? And, you know, when you say, well, Don saw this in himself. Aren't you Don? Later. Yes, and tell me your name, please.
My name is Malcolm.
Thanks, Malcolm.
Glad to meet you, Don.
You too. Thank you.
I'm going to tell you something about I. I've been thinking about me a lot lately because my wife died on February 4th. And I'm in a lonely, big house. And I think about me and I. And I get depressed. And I'm writing a book on grief because I'm trying to dissect the feelings that people go through when you do that. But I've come to the conclusion fairly recently, starting with coming to this church, that when you start to see people, you go from I to we. And what I see that impresses me is the first time coming here, I've made it all 8 Sundays in a row here, loved it, was after the service, all the children come up and stand there. And you can tell by just looking at them that it's a very special spiritual place. And I keep asking myself, well, what's driving this? And what I'm seeing from our discussion tonight is that it's people talking with people, not thinking about themselves, thinking about the important things in life. Why is God important to us?
Yeah.
And I want to thank you because the more I've been talking with other people, the more my grief has been, it'll never go away, but it's turning me away from that point, and it's very helpful.
Yeah.
And that's what I kind of wanted to say, because I learned about this church because I'm a very good friend of one of your people. You know Father Keating. He and I are wonderful friends. We've known each other for many years. In fact, I actually interviewed him a couple of years ago, and I have a nice DVD to let you see it if you'd like it sometime. But I learned about this church from a retreat up at St. Benedict's Monastery. And what a beautiful place. And I hope if you haven't been there, that's the root of this church. You need to go up there and see it. Because Father Keating says, Malcolm, have you heard of the Church of the Conscious Harmony? I said, no. He said, well, there's one down in Austin. You need to go down and see Tim and Barbara. I said, okay, I'll do it. But it wasn't until 8 weeks ago that I did come here. And what I saw was this transformation. I didn't know what a work group was. But I'm beginning to see now how everyone functions together. It's an unselfish way of giving of oneself so that you can feel comfortable here. You feel wanted here. God's presence, God's spirit is here, is radiating all the time. That's my impression.
Thank
I hope
you.
I didn't talk too long.
Thank you, Malcolm. Thank you. So could you hear? Could you hear the importance of 3 lines of work? Yeah. Yeah. Yes, Sandra.
What's coming to me from tonight's reading is, I don't know how many dozens or hundreds or thousands of work principles there are in these commentaries, but sometimes when I'm thinking about my aims, I go back to the fundamental of self-observation, non-identification, and self-remembering. And that's been happening a lot, especially over these recent readings. And but then I have to remember to back up to uncritical self-observation,
yeah.
Because otherwise I go into the negative parts of sinners, which isn't truth.
Yeah.
So over the holiday break, we've been cleaning things up, and we've been coming across old pictures, home movies, and things like that. So in tonight's reading, where we're observing all of these different aspects, eyes, behaviors, there was one tape in particular that I came across recently of when I was in the business world quite some time ago. And in watching it, it was almost as if observing eye was watching some aspects of the recurrence that still happens on a regular basis. Mm-hmm. It was very eye-opening. I plan to go back with the remote in hand to pause.
Mm-hmm.
And the teachings that Donald is so good at reminding everybody of, 3 centered observation, name it, not identify, self-remember. And I kind of want to get the notebook out and just see how many. We've had assignments in the past that says how many eyes can you see? And just in watching it, it was shocking. One of the most shocking parts is I could see where I was getting frustrated on this tape in a professional setting. And it was later discussed, but it still happens. And so being able to really non-identify with that, I think, will be extremely useful in stopping recurrence.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it will. And self-remembering in Christ as the next step will be even further. Yeah. David.
Before my share, I find a little serendipity in what you said earlier about talking in the third person, Donald, because ever since I met this woman, she talks in the third person all the time, and it's not happy. And I used to think it was the craziest thing. Now I think she's been a work student in some other life. Friday, so we had the work assignment Thursday night, Friday, you know, busting into my Friday, feeling really good about the assignment. I have a contractor coming to the house for a two-hour job. Has to be there 9 in the morning, finish at 11. I have a hard stop appointment at 11:30 that takes me about close to a half hour to get to. So 9 o'clock comes, nobody there. 9:10, nobody there. 9:20, nobody there. And the doorbell in my mind rings, and it's my old friend, Accountability Eye, shows up. Accountability Eye shows up. So I said, perfect, externally consider, don't know what's happening with this gentleman. He's late, could be caught in traffic, maybe he's got a flat. You know, I'm going through all those scenarios. Not identify, self-remember. 9:20 turns into 9:40. Now I'm doing the math going, he can't finish this job by 11 o'clock. Self-observe, non-identify, self-remember, he shows up. Now I'm all kinds of turmoil inside at this point, you know, because now I'm thinking, am I going to turn the guy away? I don't know what to do. And he's just so delightful. I mean, he's just bubbly. Oh, sir, so I'm sorry, I ran a little late, you know, this, that, and the other, but we'll get it done as quickly as we can. So this two-hour job that he told me about ends up being 1 hour. So he finishes in far, far time ahead of when I needed to leave anyway. So then I thought, well, that was just all a crazy, nonsensical thing to go through. was able to clear through all that negative feeling. And I'm driving to my appointment, and I'm wondering, well, why do I feel so bad? And what I realized was that eye that had become so, I mean, it has a cot next to my bed, this eye, you know, this is my buddy. That I had become so used to that eye being so predominant in my interactivities with people that what I didn't expect, Donald, was the critic eye came in and pile drive me down to the mat. Like, how could you possibly let this happen again? You know, there's, you know this eye. You know what it does. And it still took you down that rabbit hole.
Yeah.
So it was just, you know, Tim talks about the legion.
Right.
And so I was almost feeling so good about, you know, I had visibility on this guy from the beginning. You know, I saw him ring the doorbell. And not the guy, but yeah, the guy in my head. And then, but I wasn't expecting the critic eye. And that beat me up for a lot of the afternoon. Yeah. Just feeling sort of, wow, you know, you didn't learn anything from that exercise, you know. That,
yeah.
And I didn't, I wasn't able to do three-centered observation on the critic eye. And I've been sharing that with my work partner, is that I'm trying to focus on that eye that comes in after the fact and says, wow, you're a jerk.
Yeah. Yeah, that's okay. That's okay to not do a three-centered observation on the critic, because often all you need to do is just Do the self-observation. See the I in all three centers. Name it. And then just wait for the critic. It'll come. It'll come. And as soon as the critic comes, my experience is, complete. There you are. Now, because in me what's happened is the critic would then take, sometimes I'd watch it take my energy or my attention would go to the critic and I'd be off in critic land following that, and now I'm lost. And the work never guides us, that I've never read anyway, to do a three-step on the critic. Just wait for it. There it is. Oh, yes. Yes. Thank you. Thank you. Because the beautiful thing about the critic is there's just an eensy-beensy bit of usefulness in what that critic's going to say that I want to hear, and the rest I just release and send up. You know what I mean? Yeah. It's like, the critic would say, see, you didn't listen. You didn't listen. You've been through this before. You didn't listen. Here you are again. And you can just tell the tone of it. It's like, oh, here I go again. I didn't listen. No, I'm under its energy now. And all I need to do is like, yes, that guidance was there and I didn't listen. Thank you. This is not I. This is an energy. I am God's child. Thank you, Lord. Yes, Catherine, I thought there was one more hand.
So I had a very mundane kind of life assignment to complete, and it had been on my to-do list for a good while. So I made an aim to do my self-observation around those distracting, the eyes that want to distract themselves with something to keep me from doing the thing that needs to be done. And I didn't make an aim to like not go with them, just to sort of observe them uncritically. And so I could, so that happened and that happened, and then I thought, man, I spent the whole day looking at these distracted eyes. Where is the, where's the work principle that's going to get me over to the side to do the thing I want to do, And so finally it did get done. It actually, watching those, but then it got done, and it was the eyes that said, oh, that's pretty good, or, that's a nice job. They're going to really like this, off to these people or whatever. And so, I was reading one of those commentaries that we had for tonight, the other day, and all of a sudden it came to me that if I'm seeing this eye, then that's not who I am, that eye that always distracts itself. And, because I want to be the eye that gets the job done. And then I could see that I wasn't that eye either. And they were both really mundane life eyes anyway, but maybe a job as a deputy steward, mm-hmm. or a work eye, because it's making some kind of aim and then practicing our will. So there's a work idea around that, I think. Yeah. But the thing, there was a feeling that came in when I realized that having those things to look at meant that I was not that, but I was right. The observer, and just sort of that feeling the observer,
yes.
Had a different level of energy.
Yeah, very good. Well done, well expressed too. Thank you. So the one final thing, the place where we have to continue to keep our attention is on self-remembering. So what I said earlier about Alicia standing up and saying to a group that it wasn't easy living with me, think about the implications of that. That it took for that person to be safe enough to say that, it took an audience in a church of 70 people in order to speak the truth. that wasn't being heard anyplace else. Can you imagine what it must have been like to live with that, with a person like that? Can you imagine? For each of us, the work has shown us so much. Let's take a moment right now and feel the divine within. Let's practice self-remembering for just a moment. Feel the life pulsing through us that we can't explain. The joy of being in this church with each other in these teachings. All the sacred beings that are in our life. The joy of prayer. The love that we experience when looking out and seeing through Christ's eyes. This is who we are. This is what our transformation is taking us to. So as we continue to talk and read about transformation, let's keep in mind what that transformation is that we're aiming towards. This is really important. What is it that we're wanting to become? And in all of our observations, all of our separations, end with the practice of self-remembering. And even if it doesn't feel like it's legitimate, you feel like you're phony, you feel like you're faking it, the work asks us to practice it. Practice it anyway. Because the Spirit will give us the experience. We just have to will ourselves to it. Yeah. We have to walk up to Jesus as lepers and say, "You can heal me if you wish." And our part is to practice that with self-remembering. So we're going to lead as much of the commentary here that we can in the next 15 minutes. The last time a paper was read about the necessity of not taking everything as I in oneself. You've heard it said before that unless a man divides himself into two, he cannot shift from where he is. Dividing himself in two? What is that? What are the two? That's it. Something that is being observed and the eye that's observing it. The saying often used with the work refers to the beginning of the process of what is called inner separation. A big, big term. If you can just remember inner separation. There's the observing eye and what the observing eye is observing. A man must first divide himself into two, but the further stages of inner separation are more complex than this. Let me give you an example. It was recently said to me by someone that he had begun to see what self-observation and separation meant for the first time. He said, "I've always been taking negative emotions as a nasty bit of myself. I realized my mistake." That's familiar, isn't it? When we see an eye, especially a negative eye, we feel that nasty bit of ourselves. And that's when the critic just gobbles up that energy and keeps us in hell. Or maybe if we've got just a little bit of separation, we're at least still feeling like we're in purgatory, but we're not in heaven. Self-observation will show us our negative states, but something further is, as a rule, necessary than mere observation of them, and that is the practice of inner separation. And no one can separate himself from anything he observes in himself if he regards what he observes as being himself. For then, inevitably, the feeling of I will pass into what he observes in himself, and this feeling of I will increase the strength and power of what he observes. Why is that? Why is it that what we've just observed, that negative I, gets stronger and stronger? Mm-hmm. Identification. We're feeding it. We're feeding that I. Yep. He has to learn to say in the right way, this is not me, not I. Now, if he takes this negative emotion as a nasty bit of himself, he will not be able to separate himself from them. Do you see why? He will not be able to separate himself from them because he is taking them as himself, and so giving them the validity of I. And as was said in the last talk, if we give to everything in ourselves a feeling of I, if we say I to everything we think or feel or say or imagine, nothing can alter, for I cannot alter I. And if we practice self-observation on this basis, everything we observe will be I. Whereas the case really is that everything in us, practically speaking, is it. That is, the machine going by itself. Instead of saying, I think, we should realize that it would be far nearer the truth if we said, it thinks. Instead of saying, I feel, it would be nearer the mark to say, it feels. What we call ourselves, what we say I to, is actually an immense world, larger and more varied than the outer world that we behold through our external senses. We do not say I to what we see in the outer world, but we say I to everything that takes place in the inner world. This mistake takes many years to even modify a little. Yeah. Yeah, patience and practice. But sometimes we are given the clear light of understanding for a moment and we realize what it means and what the work is continually telling us. If a man ascribes evil to himself, he is in the wrong position in regard to it, just as if he ascribes good to himself and the merit of it. Every kind of thought can enter your mind. Every kind of feeling can enter your heart. But if you ascribe them to yourself and you say I to all of them, you fasten them to you and cannot separate internally from them. One could avoid negative thoughts and feelings if one does not take them as oneself, as I. But if one takes them as I, one combines with them. That is, one identifies with them and then cannot avoid them. There are inner states, states within all of us, that we must avoid, just as one avoids walking into the mud in the external visible world. One must not listen to them, must not go with them, must not touch them, or let them touch you. Sometimes that touching you means from others. This is inner separation. But you cannot practice inner separation if you ascribe everything that takes place in your inner invisible life, where you really all live, to yourselves. I have often been struck by people asking me about themselves in regard to thoughts that plague them and worry them. For example, people who pride themselves on what is called clean-minded often find themselves tortured by indecent thoughts and images. This is exactly what happens if a person insists on thinking that everything in him or her is I. In this connection, I remember that after we left the Institute in France, we went to Scotland, to my grandfather's house. He had collected an immense library, among which there were a great many theological and moral volumes. They were, of course, entirely formatory. But having nothing else to read, I spent some of the long winter evenings there in trying to understand what they were all about. There were the usual endless acrimonious arguments about the nature of the Trinity, the nature of heresy, and so on. But I noticed that one subject of debate that often came up was whether we are responsible for our thoughts. Whether we are responsible for our thoughts. Some of the most severe moralists insisted that we were. But a few of these now long dead theologians took the point of view that we were not. Some said that the devil sent us our thoughts. But no one of those writers from whom I read took a psychological view of this question. At any moment, the strangest thoughts and images can enter us. True or false? Me too. If we say I to them, if we think that we thought them, they have power over us. And if we then try to eliminate them, we find it impossible. Does the work say eliminate them? Nope. Why? I will repeat one of my own illustrations of this situation. Suppose you're standing on a plank and trying to lift it and struggling as hard as you can to do so. Will you succeed? That's right. Because you yourself are trying to lift yourself and it is impossible. It requires a considerable reorientation of one's whole conception of oneself to be able to realize what all this means. Father, forgive them. They know not what they do. So many buffers and forms of pride and stupid ways of thinking prevent us from seeing what the situation within us is really like. We imagine we are in control of ourselves. We imagine we are conscious, and we always know what we are thinking and saying and doing. We imagine we are a unity and that we have a real permanent I and so have will. And we imagine many other things besides. All this stands in our way. And before we can practice inner separation, a quite new feeling about oneself and about what one really is necessary. Any aha moments during that commentary? Yes, Joe.
It was just in you reading that I had a revelation this week in yoga, but it was just that we're constantly identifying with these eyes and just saying these eyes are us, and I realized that my body has become that accumulation of eyes, and I'm literally frozen in a body that is filled with negative eyes, and it was just a revelation for me. I was doing some hip opener, and basically I thought, oh my God, I'm this accumulation of eyes.
Yeah.
And so it not only somehow transforms us into some person filled with negative emotion that spouts out more negative emotion, but it actually translates itself to our body. And I had the revelation this week that, wow, this is why Gurdjieff was having us do movements class or some type of movement on a daily basis to help detoxify that crystallization of those eyes that have really just become a massive accumulator of negativity.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
It's just.
Yeah, it is big.
Yeah.
You know, so many in here have taken the Lessons in Truth class, and you remember the first chapter where Emily is saying that, is saying the same thing from the unity point of view, that we take our bodies as ourselves. And so she gives us these affirmations. I am spirit. I am spirit, perfect, holy, and harmonious. Nothing can hurt me or make me sick or afraid, for spirit is of God, and God cannot be sick, hurt, or afraid. I manifest my true self as spirit in this body now. Changes the whole perspective on everything. Yeah, but we see ourselves, this body is I. And sometimes I get a little frustrated when I'm reading scripture and they're using the old language of thou and thee. And I wonder, wow, if we did that today, what help that might be. Anybody else from the commentary? Yes, Kathy.
That sentence towards the end that says we imagine that we are in control of ourselves has really been hitting me. Of course, I didn't have that sentence in my mind at the time, but I have found many different times recently I will be saying something, mm-hmm. and in my mind I'm thinking, like with my daughter, that I told her I thought I told her that I put lavender essential oil on her daughter's wrist before she went to sleep, and she says back to me, you put eucalyptus on her? And I had not a clue that I said something totally different than what my mind was saying. And that happens between Bob and I too. And I mean, I really was getting concerned about it, but hearing this is just really affirmation.
Yeah.
Before I was taking it, okay, it's showing me man really can't do. We think we can, but we can't.
Yes.
But now to think here, I thought I was in control of what I was saying, what comes out of my mouth, but it's really showing me I am not in control of anything.
Yeah. Good, now I can start being me, right? Yeah. No, he's pointing out what the work talks about is wrong use of imagination. Yeah. Now, practicing self-remembering, now that's right use of imagination. Yeah? Okay. Stephen, and then we'll end with you.
There's just the one little part that where he's talking and he says, I have always been taking negative emotions as a nasty bit of myself. I realize my mistake and I recognize that habit. Sometimes when I'm trying to describe the multiplicity, I would say that it's a part of me. And just to put it in a more everyday language, and I can see where that practice is as I'm identifying with it still. I'm identifying with the multiplicity. I am the multiplicity, but I'm not really. I can see the distinction here, the inner separation. When I read that and could feel the experience of doing that over and over again, and then the previous commentary that we read to begin with, it's like, no, I'm none of it. I'm not the multiplicity. And for me, that was just a way of feeling into
that
it.
That is a big shift, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, another good thing to remember is when you see an eye, it's food. Food for what? Transformation. What's it going to feed?
Essence.
It's food. It's like, oh. Now, it can be a nasty bit of myself, or it can be, oh, food. Yeah. We all like food. It's going, the energy that's in that eye is going to feed our essence if we practice. Yeah. By the grace of God. Our exercise for this week is going to be focusing on inner separation. I'm observing something that is part of it. separation is I recognize that I, as observing I, am observing this. So let's work between the two. Keep that as your mantra for the week. Inner separation. Inner separation. And as you do, I will give you a marker to look for. And that is, inner separation in the practice of observing I will slow down time for you, your experience of time. And you'll notice, if observing I is working and you're seeing the difference, that which is observed and that which is seeing, you'll notice that there's this little moment of break between what's about to come out and a work idea. Let's take up an offering for our church. And as we practice inner separation, as we're going through the motions here, we're preparing our tithes and offering. Let's say our offering prayer together. God's love has always met and will always meet all my needs. I give freely and receive joyfully. And how blessed we are to simply remember God. Amen. Thanks, Jackie. Thank you, Ellen. Together we bless these tithes and offerings to the victory of consciously chosen love in each of our lives and across our planet over the lie that we're separate and are useless acting out from fear. In Christ we pray. Amen. Good night.